Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Middle-Aged Gaming. Today we bring you another episode of Player 3 Press Start, featuring world record high score holder in the arcade game Klax, and coincidentally my father, Roger Gray. So grab a 2-liter bottle of Shasta and your All Rush mixtape. Let's rock. Hello everyone, it's me, Adam, from Middle Age Gaming, and we are here today. If you can read the names, you can probably notice that I am Adam Gray, and our guest today is Roger Gray. And if you have good eyesight, you can probably also tell that we look a little bit alike, and that is not purely coincidence. That is because this is, in fact, my father, and he is a legitimate world record holder for a video game. It's an obscure one, but it's still there. And he's very proud of this fact. So before we begin, would you like to give us a little bit of background on yourself? Like, you know, who are you? What's going on? I mean, I obviously know who you are, but not everybody watching does. So you want to go ahead and give us a little background?
Sure. I'm Adam's father. Adam is the oldest of seven children. Okay. So father of seven children. Sam, I'll go through the list. Sam, Mara, Anna, I'm pretty good at this. Lydia, Leah, and Jacob is the youngest. Okay, had him over 12 years. It was a rather tight span. And that's about all about me.
Defined by your children.
Defined by my children, yeah. I will say got into video gaming because we got the Sega Genesis system. And Adam was small, about 5 years old or whatever. And and they played it constantly. So I played a little bit with them. And that's how I got into it. And Adam's first word was Diet Coke, but his little sister's first word, Lydia, was Atari, because the opening sound in the video game was Atari. She'd go, Atari, or whatever. So,
no, it was Sega.
Sega. What am I saying? Atari. Sega. Yeah, it was Sega. You're absolutely right. Sega.
Yeah, so...
the tune wasn't right.
yeah. So the original, the original Sonic the Hedgehog, when you load it up, it would have a little screen there and, you know, Sega. And so apparently that was my sister Lydia's first words because we played quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
So have you been watching the podcast? Have you been keeping up with it or?
No, I have. This is the first time I've been involved. So sorry about that.
Oh, okay. So you haven't even listened to us.
Not yet.
Thanks for that familiar support there. I was going to ask you what your favorite episode is, but apparently you don't have one. Okay, well, yeah. That got awkward real quick. All right, so you've been around for a while now. You predate Pong. So what was the first game that you remember playing? I mean, was it Pong or Pac-Man? Or do you remember the first video game that you played?
A friend of mine in graduate school had a Pong game. And I remember it was real complicated how he had to wire it up to his TV set. And we used to play Pong on it. Also, pizza parlors back then when I was in college and graduate school had Pong. So we'd play that, you know, in pizza parlors. But so Pong was the first game.
And okay.
Didn't play much Atari. But again, when we got the Sega system, played quite a bit with you guys. So.
All right. Yeah, I remember one time we... A couple different stories, both having to do with Sonic the Hedgehog. The first one, my brother Sam and I, we would play, and we would play level one, and we would get to Dr. Robotnik, the first boss, and we just couldn't beat him. And so we thought, you know, we were very young. We were like, oh, this is one of those, like, you can't beat the boss. You just fight it till you die. That's the whole point. Like, you know, we've beaten the game. We've finished it. And it was literally just level three of the first act, basically. Or the third act of the first level. And we legitimately thought we'd beaten the game. And then, you know, you came along one time and you just beat Dr. Robotnik on your first try. And it just blew our minds and just opened up this whole, like, wow, there's more. There's so much more to play. And we were just blown away by that. And then after that, you know, we could beat the boss just fine. But yeah, for the longest time, we just couldn't figure it out. I guess we were too young. I do believe you were the only one in our family to ever beat Fantasia. The old Disney game.
I did beat Fantasia one time.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Sam or I ever beat it. I think maybe Mara did, or maybe Sam did. I never played it all the way through.
It really was hard.
It was hard. Yeah, and then the second story that I have was I remember we were moving to the new house. So we were in a rental house and we had a game room in there, and Sam and I were playing Sonic the Hedgehog 2, and we'd been playing Sonic the Hedgehog 2 for a really, really long time. And we could never beat it. And then finally one time we beat it. And I remember we were so excited that you were actually not in the house. You were next door at some kind of lunch or whatever with, like, I guess some of the other parents from around the block or whatever. And we were so excited that we ran next door to go get you, to bring you back so you could watch the ending of Sonic the Hedgehog to show you that we had beaten it, because we were so proud. And I remember you were a little bit irritated about that we dragged you all the way over just to watch this. But yeah, we were so proud of that because we were like, we beat it. We finally beat it. So I remember that. I don't know if you remember that or not, but
I doubt I was mad.
I remember you were a little bit irritated, like, you dragged me over for all the way over for this. Like, you weren't mad, but it was just like, seriously, like, you guys just beat it again later and show me.
Yeah, those are hard things to beat. You know,
they were. Because they didn't have save points. I mean, once you got to Sonic 3, you could get save points, and then you could, you know, continue right from wherever you ended. But in the original ones, you just had to play it all the way through or have the cheat code to advance through the levels that way.
Yeah.
So it was tough. I mean, it was a time investment too. You know, you couldn't. I remember, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, we have to pause the game or something. But it's like, no, you know, nowadays, yeah, you can just save it pretty much any time for most games. So that's definitely changed a lot.
Well, yeah, you could get to the very end of the game and then have a super hard thing right before the end and not be able to do it. And you have to start from the beginning again, over and over again. It took a...
Oh, yeah, that was... that. Both the Sonic 1 and Sonic 2 had that. And that the very last level, there were no rings. So if you got hit one time, you were dead. So that was... Yeah, you go through the whole game. If you have, as long as you have rings, you can take a hit unless you fall into a bottomless pit. And you'll lose your rings, but then, you know, you can continue. You can even try to grab some of them back so you can continue to survive. There were checkpoints, but in both games, the last boss, there were zero rings. And yeah, it was one hit, you die. You had to do it flawlessly on the last boss.
Yeah.
And Sonic 2 had, I don't remember if it was, you fight Metal Sonic and then you fight the giant Dr. Robotnik robot. And I don't remember if he has two phases or just the one phase, but yeah, you basically have to fight two bosses back to back flawlessly. So yeah, it was tough. It was hard back then.
It was a great game though.
It was a fantastic game. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. So you have a world record in the game Klax, and I'm assuming that quite a few people in the world, our viewers included, don't really know what Klax is. So would you like to fill us in on what exactly is Klax?
Okay. Klax is basically kind of the chess of Tetris. It's like Tetris, except rather than just dropping things into certain slots, you just have tiles, which are just square tiles, but you have to drop them in such a way that you make complex patterns. Okay. So you have a conveyor coming down, just like in Tetris, and it's got all these tiles coming at you, and they come faster and faster, and there are, I think, five different colors, and there's also a wild tile, and you get points by doing, it's like a tic-tac-toe board, basically. You diagonal line, horizontal line, vertical line, and if you get horizontal and vertical at the same time, you do combinations, the scoring ramps up, and so you catch these tiles that come down with a paddle, and then you drop them into a 25 by 25 grid.
You mean 5 by 5? 25 tiles, yeah, total.
It's 5 by 5 grid. Keep correcting me. And and then so a simple pattern might be like the British flag or something with, you know, horizontal, vertical. Anyway, and then you drop a wall tile right down the middle, and all of a sudden you create this. Yeah, this pattern scores a lot of points, but it's got 100 different levels, and they're grouped by level, five levels at a time, and you can skip levels. If you beat the first five, you can go up to the 10th level or 15th level or whatever. But yeah, that's basically the game. It's a very complicated version of Tetris. It's kind of a follow on to Tetris.
And then you can cast the tiles back forward again too, if you don't want them, right?
Right. You can, if you don't, well, if you want to on the paddle, you can hold up to 5 tiles. Okay. But if you want to reorder the tiles on your paddle or drop them in a different order, you can throw them back on the board and then catch them in a different order, juggle the order of your tiles on the paddle or such, you can drop them on the board the way you want to. So it's really a juggling routine you're doing. It's to score a lot of points.
And okay.
People can either do it or can't.
So, I mean, you're a mathematician by trade, correct?
Right.
Right. So do you think that in some way kind of helped you out in figuring out kind of the patterns that you needed to get the big scores or processing this?
It's kind of essential. I don't think my video game dexterity or, you know, the ability to the hand-eye control is probably nearly as good as yours. I got into this when I was in my 30s and 40s and 50s and I'm slower. And so I made up for that by coming up with new combination patterns, you know, kind of creating figures and stuff, new ways to play. And that's how I could kind of make up for my lack of, you know, hand talent.
You don't have the twitch speed to compete with these youngins, but you have the intelligence to compensate.
Creativity, whatever. I don't know.
The creativity.
Yeah, it's math talent. I was really good at quick answer math in like high school and stuff like that, you know, math competition.
Oh, okay.
That came in handy.
All right. And you actually have multiple records for Clack. So how does that work? How do you have more than one record in the same game?
Because you have different records for different platforms. So Clacks was, they made Clacks versions for, I don't know, 15 or 20 different game systems, like Sega and Nintendo and TurboGrafx and, you know, all sorts of different GameCube, some of the handheld stuff.
Oh, they have a GameCube version.
So you see, you had a lot of different versions. So I kind of set a goal to, you know, once I got one record, I set a goal to get records in all the game systems I could. And I got them in a lot of them. I didn't get them in all of them. The one reason is you can't find certain game systems anymore, even on eBay. And another is I don't know if you know the Twin Galaxies story and how that...
I mean, I do, but our audience doesn't.
Yeah, okay. Twin Galaxies story, it started by Walter Day back, I don't know, it was about 1980 or somewhere around there, maybe in the late 70s. And what Twin Galaxies was it had tournaments and it had a record board that had all the records for all sorts of video games. And he wanted to get out of about 2010 to get into music or something. So he sold Twin Galaxies and it went through a bunch of different owners and Twin Galaxies basically fell apart for a while. And so that was about the time when I was going through this. So Twin Galaxies went offline for about a year. And so I did get a couple records and I never even posted, you know. So that's why I didn't get more, but... Anyway, once you kind of master it, it's not too bad to learn new game systems. And you know, the games are a little bit different. They play a little bit differently, but it's not that big of a deal.
Okay, so we got a comment here saying you remind my co-host Priyan of Woody Harrelson.
I get two things, it's been consistent. I get compared to Woody Harrelson by random strangers, you know. Also, the other one is Robin Williams, and I get that pretty consistently, too. And I don't get it, but it's consistent. The people walk up and say, you know, you look just like Robin Williams. I'm like, okay, whatever.
But you got the Alex Trebek mustache there going on.
Oh, okay. I've never been compared to him. So.
All right. So, what are some of the strategies for beating Clacks? I mean, you mentioned that you can do kind of these combos and you can do, you know, skipping levels and stuff like that. I mean, would it be advantageous to skip a level? Why skip a level instead of just racking up the points in that level? What would be the advantage of that?
You get bonuses for skipping levels. You get extra points.
More than you would get by playing the level?
it's comparable. What I used to do was I'd try skipping and not skipping and see which way worked the best. Because I mean, there are pros and cons. You know, skipping, you get the free bonus points. Also, there's a thing called ramping. And ramping means that the tiles come faster and faster and faster, just like in Tetris. And if you skip a level, then you can get to higher scoring levels before ramping kills you, you know? So,
okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things that you're trading off. So you just try different strategies and figure out which levels are best to play in what order.
So even if you are ramping, or so even if you skip to a higher level, it'll actually start at the slower speed than it would if you had just been playing naturally or from the beginning?
It's been a long time since I played, but I think it, yeah, I think the ramping is like over time and not necessarily just on the level you're at. It's been a long time since I played though.
How long has it been?
Oh, probably about 8 years. I've played for 16 years. I started back in the early 90s when you guys were, you know, when we got a Sega system. And we ended up getting a Clax system, a Clax game. So I played it some. And then what happened was there's an old magazine. It was issued from 1990 to 1995. It's called Swap Pro. And it had a records board on it. So I looked and I just looked through that and I said, no, I think I can beat that that Clax record, you know. So I played and played and played it, and I did beat it. And then I sent the photograph in and mailed it in, and it didn't get on the board. So I ran up the score some more, sent the photograph, the next record in, and that time it got on the board. And then it's like, I beat the record, I can stop. And then, so I didn't play for 16 years. And then a lot of you guys may have seen it, but the King of Kong documentary on Twin Galaxies came out. I think 2007, and around 2010, I saw it and I said, oh, somebody's keeping records. You know, I knew Swap Pro had stopped and I thought, that, you know, nobody's keeping any records. I didn't care. And then I went to Twin Galaxies, looked at the records there and said, oh, I think I can beat that. And I picked the game back up.
And you had some controversy when you went to Twin Galaxies, correct?
I did. That was during its rough period. And it went to new ownership. They decided to charge money to put the records, you know, to pay for the refereeing of the records. So like $25 or something like that. So I was like, nah, whatever. I'm like, you know, I'm going to wait a little while. And about a month after they started doing it, I'm like, well, I'm going for this and I have $25. I'll just put the money in and pay for the record. And it got accepted, and then there were a lot of people who didn't like the idea of paying for records, and so I kind of got hate mail or whatever, because I actually broke down and paid. I was the first person, even after a month after they changed the policy, I was still the first person to pay to put a record up.
So these are kind of like purists that are like, oh, you know, the records, you know, shouldn't be a for-profit thing, and...
Right, exactly.
You wouldn't by any chance have any of that hate mail that we could read, would you?
I think your brother-in-law, David Pierce, was looking at it one time and reading it. So I don't know how to find it, but he found it online.
do you remember any examples of the kind of things people were saying? Or
what? They just thought it was, you know, wrong of me to post it, you know, and pay for it. I don't know.
It's better just to not have a record out there than to have somebody pay to have it submitted.
And I don't think the pay policy lasted very long. In fact, they locked up, I think, Twin Galaxies for a while. That just went offline, and then I think came back under new ownership, and I guess it doesn't have that pay policy. I think that might have been short term. I'm not sure.
Okay. But even so, even without the pay policy, nobody's been able to break some of these records, even to date. Right?
The question is if they tried.
Yeah, Clax is a bit obscure. It's not the most common game out there.
It's not like I'm Michael Jordan of anything. You know, it's like I'm
probably Michael Jordan of Clags.
That's right. Yeah, he has a, you know, 200,000 people trying, and you know, five people played Clags, so it's not quite the same.
Yeah, I've seen. I remember I was looking at one of your YouTube videos and. Or I don't remember if it was on, or maybe it was Twin Galaxy or something, but I saw something where it had your record listed, and there were some people who were very, as the youth say these days, salty to see, you know, like, oh yeah, he only has a score of, you know, 300 million. I could get 6 million. You know, this guy's an amateur, but that's actually part of it is that if you look at some of these records, some of them are like 6 million and then other records are 3 million. Why is there such a big difference in these records? I mean, if you would think if you could get a score in one, you wouldn't be able, you'd be able to get a similar score in another, right?
No, that the different game, it plays a little bit differently on different game systems. So I think the literal scoring is the same. You get the same number of points for the same figures, but, or design patterns, but, sometimes it's much easier on some games than others. Some, the ramping is very benign, so it doesn't really speed up super fast, and others it speeds up super fast that you know, it's almost impossible to play. So it the scores from one game system can't be compared to another. I think it was TurboGrafx. You could go over 10 million and it would go over the top of the scoring system, you know. In other ones, it's 2 million. It's almost impossible, you know, so it just depends.
So what happens if you go over 10 million? I mean, it just resets back to zero, or does it crash, or?
I did do that. It's been a long time though. I think it's like a car odometer, you know, you just go back to zero.
It resets back to zero.
That's what I see.
Okay, so they just don't have the displays for it. Technically there's another one out there, but we can't see it.
Exactly. I think that's the way it was.
Oh, okay.
And talking about, you know, my lack of, you know, hand dexterity. One time I played a bit of Tetris and I thought I was getting pretty good at it. And then your sister Mara wanted to beat me. And you know how Mara is. She got
super competitive.
She's super competitive. So she did better than me. And then on the computer system, she started rolling it beyond where they could keep scores too. I think it was 30 something thousand, two to whatever power. And she just rolled it past that. So anyway, so again,
so was one of your records, one of these cases where you went past the max score, or
the TurboGrafx, I could go past that score. That's the only game system.
Okay. And was when you have the record for that, was that one of the times that you went past the max score, or
that? I didn't submit the record to that. I think that was after, I have 7 records on the boards, but I think that one was after Twin Galaxy locked up, their site locked up. So I never submitted that one.
Oh, okay. And then I saw you were mentioning the other day when we were talking about, you were doing a video and at the end you just said, "I'm done." And, and so I was going through your YouTube videos, trying to find videos that we could put on here. And I think one of the videos that we're sampling is that video, but, it's, you were trying to do I think it was like an 8 move combo or something like that.
That's a different one, but yeah, that, I know what you're talking about, but that's not the I'm done one.
Oh, okay. I thought that was the one that you said, "I'm done." You're just like, okay, that's it. I got it. I'm good. Moving on.
That was a cascading one, because what you can do is you can drop these tiles such that you score one and then stuff falls down and you score another, and stuff falls down and you score another. And I was trying to see how many I could get to cascade down. And I got up to 8 and I posted that, and I'm almost certain you could get to 9, but I left it open as a challenge, but no one took me up on the 9, but I think it's doable. So if anybody's out there who want to try 9,
well, you're a mathematician. You should be able to statistically figure out what would be the highest number of combos before the board clears, right?
I think 9 was the most you could put on the board with the 20 5x5. I think 9 was the most mathematically possible you could do. You have enough tiles to do it.
Okay. And nobody's done that to date.
No, nobody tried. Not too many.
Okay, so there's a challenge out there for anybody who wants to give it a try.
Not too many people visit my sites these days, I don't think.
Unfortunately.
But the
piece of history. Come on, people.
Yeah. I'm done was that was where I was trying to show examples of my tricks. You know, there's when you talk about what was innovative, there was probably the one I liked the best was I call it a double bar H, which was a super high scoring move. It's really tricky to do, and I've never seen anybody else do it. But it scores like 600,000 points or something in a single move, and you don't even need a wild tile to do it. It's pretty amazing. And so I created a video where I use that strategy, and I have some other strategies like option plays where you set up initially such that if you get the right tiles, you want to go to the left, or different tiles, you want to go to the right. So you have a lot, you know, it's kind of an option play so that you get more chances of, you know, getting a go path. But that's the one where I said, I'm done. And what happened there was, okay, the thing about clacks, I don't know about you, but you get clacks burnout. And so after I set several records, I was totally burnt out. So I kind of achieved a really good run on one of the game systems. And then I was just like, I've had it. I can't do this anymore. So I left it there. And then about a few months later, I went back and I, you know, talked it, you know, commented through it. And but at the end, I just said, I'm done. And I haven't played since. That was the last game I ever played.
That was 8 years ago?
Yeah, 8 or 9 years ago. Something like
that. Okay, so we can expect your next playthrough to be roughly 2028, 2029. You said every 16 years or so?
Yeah, yeah. If I'm still alive. Yeah, sure.
If you're still alive. So optimistic. All right, so we have a question from Kriya, and he wants to know if you've ever tried to introduce your passion for this game to mom.
To my wife, you mean? Diane?
My mother, your wife.
Yeah. No.
Same person.
There's no way that would work. She was not into video games at all. So I tried to introduce it like to some of you kids, but it never took. I mean, Mara had better reflexes than I had, but she just never wanted to do it or whatever. So I did try it on the kids because I knew that if I could teach them the tricks, they could do it better than I could.
So what made you pick Clacks? I mean, was it because you saw a high score for this game in a magazine and then you went out and bought it, or did we already have it?
We already had it.
Okay. I don't remember getting Clacks, and it was probably never on our wish list. So I'm kind of wondering why we had it.
No, we had the Disney one and Sonic the Hedgehog, but we also had like Shove It. Remember Shove It?
I remember Shove It.
Yeah. And we had Clacks, and we just went out and when we first got the system, we got like 5 or 6 games. And I guess that never was your favorite. Marble.
Okay, Madness. So it came with the system.
No, I don't think it did. I think we just bought some. And we, oh, okay. Marble Madness, we got, you know, we got several games. And then we had as time went on.
I do remember Shove It, and that was another game that I could never beat. We tried, and that one was hard. I think you were, again, the only person who beat that one.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. So Korean's asking, he's got two questions. First one, he's asking if I ever gave this game a go. I had played it, so I knew kind of the basics of it, but I never really played it a lot. I wasn't big into puzzle games back then. However, you said you started playing this game, what, when you're late 30s, early 40s?
That's give or take? About right, yeah.
Okay, so I'm about there myself, so maybe now would be a good time.
Good to try.
Try it out. Yeah, do you have a favorite platform? For the like the Genesis for nostalgia, or you felt like one just played better, or
the Genesis for nostalgia. I liked the Genesis system. Nintendo was good. Turbo Graphics, you could run up the score very well. But
when you say Nintendo, you mean the original NES or the
Super
Nintendo?
The original. The next one? What was that called? That was a
Super Nintendo.
It might have been Super Nintendo, actually. So, yeah, I think it was Super Nintendo and Genesis. But one of the problems when you're playing Clacks is, you may run into this on those old game systems, but after a while you wear down the controller.
Happens with newer systems too. It's a huge problem.
Yeah, the newer system.
We reported on the PlayStation 5 controller. They were saying the sticks on it will burn out after, I think it was 400 hours or something like that. And they're like, yeah, the sticks after that are not designed to withstand more than 400 hours of play or something like that.
Yeah. Well, on the old system is the same way. So I bought a lot of controllers through the years. And so a lot of the enjoyment is being able to have a controller that works. So that's a big part of the game. It's very frustrating when you don't have a controller. It's just
so if I was to take up the challenge of this, what would you recommend, like on PC or?
Well, if you get a Genesis system, that was really good. As long as you can get a controller. Okay, but you can do it on, I think you can do it on a PC. I'm pretty sure you can. They have that, what's called an IMP, right? Or the MAME. The MAME system, I think, that works on a PC.
No idea.
MAME is the emulator that they used. Well, you can use to mimic the play on an actual arcade game. Because Clax was an arcade game, I think, initially.
Okay.
So, and MAME is where they took that and emulated it such that you could play all those arcades with basically the same code on a PC. I could be wrong, but I think that's right. I think I remember that right.
Okay, and that leads into Crean's second question. He was wondering, how much was the game? Do you remember how much it was now? And as far as like something like MAME, do you know if the games are basically at this point, are they public domain? Or
I think the MAME, like I said, I did this about 10 years ago, well, 8 years ago, but I think MAME is pretty much public domain, I think. I don't remember paying anything for MAME. M-A-M-E.
Oh, okay.
And then you can get the games, but I could be wrong, but that's the way I remember it.
And do you know how much this game was originally back in 1990, whatever?
Gosh, the games were real expensive back then, actually.
They were. We talked about that, where if you, like, especially when you take into consideration inflation, games back then would be over $100 in current prices. But now a game is $60, and on PlayStation, they're ramping this prices up to $70 because there are people in the industry saying that current prices are just not sustainable based on, you know, a game like Clax, you could probably have one guy make it in a year on his own without, you know, too much trouble. And but like a modern game has teams of 500 people, you know, and takes 10 years.
I think I had the Wikipedia site up, but I won't look at it, but I seem to remember what it said was a guy developed it in like 3 days.
So the guy designed the entire game in 3 days. Yeah. And it's just like
something like that.
One guy in his spare time, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, he probably, you know, didn't sleep that 3 days, but yeah, I mean, this game is dirt simple, which doesn't mean it's a bad game, but it's super simple. And yeah, the games, how much were they? You know, like $35 or something like that. I don't know. They weren't cheap.
I think they were like 40 or something.
Yeah. 40, it might have been 40, and Clax made it a little bit less since it was simple, but yeah, they were pretty steep back then.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, now you have teams of, you know, 200, 300, 500 people working for years on modern games, and just the cost of making games has just gone up dramatically. I mean, you can't just pound out a game in 3 days by yourself anymore.
Yeah, really.
At least not in most situations. I think the guy who did Minecraft basically did that kind of on his own. But again, Minecraft is basic form is, again, incredibly simple. It's all just blocks, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. So do you have any plans to go back, or are you done, as you said?
I was done then. I don't have too many. I don't have plans to go back right now. What happens is, and you're video playing with players, but so you know this, there's no time to do it. The cash line for Clax was something like, it's the 90s, there's time for Clax. And somebody wrote in as a comment, it's 2010, there's no time for Clax. What are you talking about? Comment about that year. Where do you find the time for Clax? And the way I found time for Clax was, I still had kids at home and working a full-time job. So I basically cut it out of my sleep time, which you guys might sometimes be forced to do too. I don't know. But so Clash was like Doritos, you know, or something. Or if you play one game of Clax, you're going to go, oh, I can beat that. I can do better. And you play one game after another until you're basically exhausted. And, and you're like, I don't know if I want to do this again. And then you get into it and you do it again. But once I play
like Doritos.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're like, oh, I'm not doing that again. And then the next day, I'm craving for some more Doritos.
So that last time, I was like, it was getting to me. So that's completely burned out. And the other thing about Clax, I don't know if you get this in a regular video game, but Clax is like Tetris, but it's more complex. But it puts you in this alternate universe. I don't know how to describe it, but where meanings are geometric relationships and timings and things like that. So you're driving down the road and you know, it's a multi-lane highway, and all of a sudden you're playing Clax with the cars and the different colors in your mind. It's just a different type of realities, and it's kind of like math, the same way you get into the theoretical math. It just puts you in this kind of little corner of your mind, and that's a little uncomfortable too. So yeah, I was really burnt out. So I don't know. Maybe I will. I'm a little reluctant to, but maybe I will.
Yeah, I was playing a game called Catherine, and I really loved it. And it's another puzzle game, but the idea is that there's a tower, and your character has to either push or pull blocks out, and he can only push or pull a block and then climb up one block. And so basically, you have to rearrange this tower as you're climbing it. And I played this game a lot when it, you know, actually it was long after it came out, but I played the game, and I was playing it so much that I remember there was one time where I was looking at a book and my mind was suddenly like, this word doesn't belong here. You need to move this word out and then put it there. You know, like, and my mind is just like telling me, rearrange these words. This is, if I wanted to climb this paragraph, this is how I would rearrange them. And, you know, it's looking for like ladder patterns, you know, with the spaces between words, and you start like, you see it and you're like, this is how I would climb the page. And, and just things like that. Yeah. It's just your mind just attunes to something different. That's one thing that I noticed, not exactly related to games, but here in Taiwan, when you came to visit, you mentioned how crazy people are driving, and like just people are just zipping by on scooters left and right and cutting off cars and whatnot. And when I first came, the thing that I noticed was, where are all the other scooters? Where is everybody on the road? And my mind would keep track of where everybody was. But the longer I've been in Taiwan, I've noticed that now when I drive, my mind keeps track of where are the spaces between the scooters that I can fit. And so when I'm driving, you know, it used to be I was aware of where is everybody else on the road. But now my mind has shifted to, where can I fit through this maze? You know, like, so it's shifted my perception of driving.
Yeah.
So, but now you're semi-retired, basically,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I retired from the government January 1st, and I'm just starting up working part-time.
So now there's plenty of time for Clax.
There is more time. I wouldn't have to do it in my sleep time. But I did learn you could play Clax half asleep, though. I remember one game I was doing really well, and I was like falling asleep, and all of a sudden I realized, hey, I got a really good record type game going. I just gotta wake up. And you're just trying to wake up.
Partially like a bit of a muscle memory, but with your mind as well. Like you're like a pattern memory where your mind just recognizes it and you don't even have to think anymore.
Yeah, and you do it almost falling asleep, and then you don't want to stay that way, but yeah, absolutely. It's weird.
Now, would you say like a game like this, you were talking to me about it, but obviously people who are watching the show don't know. Would you say this is kind of like if you did get back into it, do you think this is kind of like riding a bike, where it's the kind of thing where, you know, maybe a few tries and suddenly you're back on top of it? Or do you think this is the kind of thing you'd have to relearn? Or,
well, after 16 years, I picked it up again, so I had some experience with that. And it's like that you have a certain muscle memory. Your fingers know what to do, but your mind doesn't know what the rules are and where the right buttons are. And then all of a sudden your fingers are hitting the right buttons, and it you know, it took about a week or so, but I got most of it back. But it was, yeah, the muscle memory always seems to be there. It's a mental part that I had to re-pick up. Because I did a lot of mental, though. When you're trying to build the patterns and stuff, you have to understand, you know, how to construct them. But so it's a mix. I can pick it back up. But my reflexes get slower and slower as they get older. So I don't know how well I could play.
All right. What are some of your... So you've played a few games. Obviously, you've played Clax, Fantasia. Would you say Clax is your favorite game of all time? Or was there actually another game that you actually think that you probably enjoyed a little bit more?
Actually, I really liked Sonic the Hedgehog myself, too. The two of those.
Okay.
But they're radically different. They're different types of games. Totally different.
Very different.
Very different experiences.
But so you enjoy, like, the puzzlers or the platformers? Or?
Yeah, I really haven't gotten into the... more sophisticated, newer games at all.
Why not?
I haven't. I needed my sleep.
All right. So do you play any games right now? Like even on the phone, like Sudoku or Tetris, or do you just basically know games right now? Or on the PC when you get bored? Or
yeah, I don't
like,
know.
My wife, Maggie, her dad is 70 and he loves playing solitaire.
Well, your mother, when she can't, she plays solitaire, and at the end of the month, when the ones she can't get, she gives to me. So I do that.
She can't get it, she gives it to you.
So we usually, yeah. So she gets all the solitaire games at the end, but no, I haven't been gaming much.
Okay, so you don't even do like Minesweeper or something on your phone, like. Candy Crush or anything like that?
I used to do Minesweeper quite a bit, and I thought I was getting pretty good at that, and then I went online and looked at the records that people had, you know, just like I did with Clax, and I said, I can't beat those. They were pretty amazing. So, yeah.
So what's the... So you mentioned with Twin Galaxies there was a bit of the controversy with the submitting the scores. What is the whole process for... If somebody wanted to break a record, like what would they have to do? Like, what do you have to record? And, you know, how do we verify that, you know, the video wasn't edited? What's the whole process there?
Yeah, I don't know what it is now. The first time for Swap Pro, all I did was just take a photograph of the screen. But that was back in the early 90s and unsophisticated and probably easy to cheat.
Harder to Photoshop back then, I guess.
Yeah. But in the, you know, like 2010, the process was basically you turn on a video camera, you know, that you got on the screen, and then you turn on the game system so they can see you turn it on and see all the settings you do, or, well, you don't do any settings, you just leave it standard stuff. And then, you know, make sure you don't change the settings. And then you just videotape it all the way from the beginning to the end. And that's, so you had to have one contiguous video of it. And then you put it on a DVD or something and send it in.
Could you say like feed the video directly into the, like, you know, plug the game system directly into whatever you were recording, or would you have to have like a camera set up watching the TV itself so they can verify that you didn't edit the video at any point?
Well, I think like in MAME, there's a recording mode in that, you know, the newer stuff, the stuff that you can play on a PC, but on the old, like, Nintendo system, Genesis system, whatever, there was no recording system on those, so you just had to do it with video.
But you could plug them in through a VCR or something, right?
You might be able to, but I wasn't that sophisticated. So maybe. I don't know that you could, you know.
Okay, and I guess there wasn't too big of a concern with people modding consoles or anything like that back then.
There probably was a concern, but I don't think it'd be very easy to do.
Okay, and it'd be very even harder to verify if it looks like it's on average, yeah.
Right, that was pretty sophisticated. There's always been cheating, I'm sure, but I didn't cheat. I'll tell you one thing that's funny, though. The visuals on the smaller, like, handhelds, you sometimes the colors were very hard to see and distinguish. Everything was sort of smaller, but the colors weren't that accurate. And so like two different colors, tiles on in the game would be so close together in color that you couldn't distinguish them, and you drop it, be one color, you think it's one color, it's a different color, and all of a sudden, you know, the scoring doesn't score. And that was super annoying. But what I found was the more I played, the faster I could pick up and more accurate I could pick up differences in color in on the actual tiles, which I found unexpected. But you could actually train yourself to see and distinguish colors better over time. It's kind of weird, but it's true.
Okay, no, that's evidence for video games are good for you. So a lot of people
exactly. Will like exactly. It
improves your vision over time. So you're talking about like maybe like an aqua and a green
exactly.
or something like that, where they're very close, but not right. completely distinct, or maybe like a red and a purple or something like that.
Red and orange or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
You couldn't see it at first, but after a while you could see the differences, and you have to react super fast in this game. So you can see them fast. Training.
So did you ever run into any problems with mom in terms of gaming? Like was she very supportive, or was she more of like, you know, maybe you should give this one up, or
you probably should give this
or is that
up.
A dangerous question? Maybe I shouldn't ask that one.
I think it was a you should probably give this up level, but she never said a whole lot, but I don't think she was thrilled.
Okay. How long? So you said there was always that feeling where you'd play a level and then you're like, I can improve that. I can do just one more. How long would an average level take? 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
A game would take about 10 minutes. It could be different on a different game system, you know. In fact, if you didn't have ramping, you could run a game all the way through the 100 levels, and that would take an hour or more, I'm sure.
But for an average run, like if for an average person running through it, 10 minutes?
10 minutes, yeah, that's pretty typical.
Okay, yeah, because I know that there's certain things where I'll be playing a game, and if, you know, my wife goes to take a shower or whatever, and I'm like, okay, this will only take me 10 minutes and I'll do it. And then I'll, you know, maybe something will come along and I'm like, okay, this, you know, this is just another 5 minutes. It's just another 5 minutes. And of course things keep racking up, but there are other things where it's like, this is a 45 minute investment. And I'm like, yeah, there's no way I'm going to finish this in time. And so I'll actually, the shorter content in a way ends up wasting more time than the longer content, because with the longer content, you're very aware of how much time you're using. But with the smaller content, it just kind of creeps up on you. You're just like, 10 minutes. I can finish it in 10 minutes. And then, it's the same thing too, where you finish it in 10, but then something screws up. You end up losing it 5, and you're like, you know, I said 10, but I only used up 5. I have 5 left. If I go 15, it's probably safe, you know, and it just gets out of hand.
Well, this one, these games ramping, the tiles would come faster and faster until it was just like, you know, downpour. And so that kind of limited the length of the game, because at a certain point, it was just so fast, it's impossible. And it was probably getting faster and faster even then. So, yeah.
What was the longest game you ever played? Do you know? Like an hour? Or do you think the longest you ever did was 20 minutes? Or?
Yeah, I don't really know. It would have to have been like TurboGrafx or something like that, because that was went over 10,000. So I could have been 45 minutes or something. I don't really know, though. But probably in that ballpark.
Oh, okay. I was just thinking, though, you guys actually, because you guys do a family game night, not with me, but with everybody else. And you guys do with the Jackbox, right?
Well, we did do some of that, but we've gone to trivia more. Whoever wins one night has to, the next night, come up with trivia questions.
Okay, I see. Yeah, because I remember one time when the PS5 was coming out, and I remember mom was saying, you should join the family game night. And then we were like, but you guys were going to have to move the time, because with the time difference, it's just not possible. So Korean's wondering why I couldn't join family game night. And the reason for that is just the time difference. Like when they were doing it would be, because you guys would do it, originally you were doing it Sunday night?
So, well, we bounce it around, but generally Sunday around 7 o'clock or something like that.
Yeah, so they'd be doing it like 7 a.m. here. And then back then it was daylight savings, so I would have to get up at like 5 a.m. so we could join family game night at 6 a.m.
But we could probably flex it around a little bit for you. But, you know, between, well, seven kids and us, it's kind of hard to get a critical mass sometimes, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Korean saying that's doable, but for me, 6 a.m. is not doable. The only way I'm getting up at 6 a.m. is if I just don't go to bed the night before and I'm already up. That's the way I do 6 a.m. But then also, too, with like Maggie and, you know, because she has to get up and get ready for work. And, you know, if you guys are playing at 7 and, you know, Maggie has to leave the house around 8, you know, so stuff like that, just getting all that together. And it was just difficult to do. And now I forgot what my question was going to be. So for anybody that knows our family, you will know that it is a genetic trait that males in our family have terrible memories. And a testament to that was, for those of you who are fans of Sesame Street, growing up, my mom would refer to my dad as Forgetful Jones. And so who was one of the Muppets who would always forget things. But yeah, so you guys would do some of the Jackbox stuff, and that would be,
we have done that stuff.
Yeah. And so mom would get in on that. And I remember what I was going to say. So I remember when the PS5 was coming out, and I was telling mom, I was like, well, you know, there are lots of family games you can play on the PS5. You know, you can play, was it Overcooked? And you got, was it the Moving Out? And you got all these kind of party games and stuff. And I was like, maybe mom, you should get a PS5. And so, she said she'd think about it, but I don't know how serious she was.
You should ask.
They're really hard to get right now, so, huh?
Yeah, well, I would probably think about it harder than she would. You can talk to me about it.
Oh, okay. But you guys had a Wii, right?
We had a what? Somebody borrowed our Wii. I think Jacob did.
Okay, did mom ever use the Wii?
Yeah, we used it. But
mom used it too?
Yeah. But a lot of our stuff's disappeared into your kids' lives, and we don't have it anymore.
That's what happens when you have, you know, seven progeny. Yeah. Stuff disappears.
Escapes us.
Reallocated. Yeah. All right. Well, that's pretty much clears out all the questions that I had typed up for me to ask. We're getting close to the end though anyway. Do you have any questions for us or anything you'd like to talk about that I didn't cover that you just want to share with our audience or the world?
I think you pretty much covered everything.
Oh, so you took notes too.
Yeah. Well, I can talk about this. I can talk about that. And we kind of touched on it, but the two reasons why I kind of, you know, started playing real hard, one was, you know, the Mount Everest of there was a record out there and I just wanted to beat it, or records. But the other thing, Clash really was an interesting game. There are all sorts of patterns and little things you could do with it that, I'd never seen done. And so it was a great creative exercise to figure out new strategies and stuff. It's a lot of fun. It's not just a straightforward game. It's complex. So,
have you ever considered maybe trying to develop your own kind of idea? Like maybe come up with some ideas or concepts for your own kind of little puzzle game or something like that? You ever considered that?
I haven't thought of that, but that's a good idea, actually.
I mean, you have time now in retirement. You know, it might be a nice little hobby to pick up, you know, some, because you know a little bit of programming, right?
I know Fortran.
Fortran's good enough. Fortran was coincidentally my best programming language in college. Nobody uses it anymore, but it was the one I performed best in. Don't ask me why.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, that would be kind of an interesting new project is see if you can one-up Clax and come up with another simple yet elegant system for to challenge yourself.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be sophisticated to be fun. I mean, you know, games.
Yeah, one of the most popular games right now is Minecraft, and that's about as simple as you can get, you know, just building in blocks and whatnot. Yeah. Korean's asking if I think I will be trying Klax now. I could play it if you guys wanted me to, but don't be expecting any world-class scores anytime in the near future.
Well, you know where to find the scores.
I'm sorry, that wasn't Korean. That was Laura. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, and if anybody wants to see the videos, which they are low production value videos, of course, the name is Roger, Roger A1B2C3.
Did you say Roter?
Roger.
Okay, I was like, did I miss that?
I didn't say that, but I might have pronounced it that way. And, oh, okay. And one weird thing
I didn't say
is
it, but that's how I pronounced it.
But the one weird thing was I went to look at them, and it's monetized now. They have advertisements sometimes. It's not every time, but sometimes advertisement pops up on my videos. So it's almost like YouTube is trying to collect advertising money on my videos by monetizing it. I don't know, because I don't get any money for it.
Well, I think for YouTube to count as getting money, you have to have a certain number of views.
No, I don't have that
money for every I think you get something for like every 100,000 views or something like that.
My numbers are way lower than that.
Yeah, but to be fair, I think one of yours has like 1,400 views or something like that. One of them.
I think one of them was around 4,000.
4,000 views.
Yeah,
that beats anything our channel's put up so far. So,
what's that?
That beats anything our channel actually has. So
well, what happened?
Embarrassing there.
Yeah. Well, I did a kind of a stunt on one of them where I scored a bunch of points on a single move. And
yeah, that was the one where you did like the 8-point combo or whatever.
A different one, but it was a high scoring stunt rather than the cascading stunt. But it got picked up in an article someplace, and all of a sudden the number of views just went up by 2,000 just in two or three days, and then. And it stabilized again. That's how that one got so high.
Ah, yeah, I forgot about that. You did an interview once. Was that for Twin Galaxies or something like that?
Yeah, when I was the very first person to pay money to have my record put in Twin Galaxies, they decided to kind of make a big deal about it. And they got this woman to interview me and write an article about it. And that got posted online, though it's long. I don't know where it is now, but... Yes, you wrote an article.
It's on the internet.
Yeah, somewhere on the internet. I don't know where. So I was, my photograph playing Klax and everything. So I was famous for, not very long.
For 2,000 people.
Yeah.
For the 2,000 people that read the article. All right. Well, that brings us about up to time. So, that brings us to our 1 hour mark, which is usually a typical show. Anything else you want to just add before we go?
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you for being a world record holder and making our family look good.
And now I've got to watch the show.
And now you got to watch the show, right? Get us up to those 4,000 views. Make sure that you text all your friends and see if we can break your record.
There you go. It's a challenge.
It's a challenge.
And I have a show right. So yeah, you can look at the tricks and beat me.
I can try, is the word you're looking for. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show and answering all our questions and giving us a little background on you and what you've done and introducing an interesting game to people that probably have never heard of it because it is kind of an obscure game. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
All right. And of course, for everybody who's watching or if you're listening to the podcast, make sure that you check out all our other videos so that we can beat my dad's record on the number of views. So you can check us out on Twitter at Gaming Aged, Facebook Middle Age Gaming 2020, YouTube Middle Gaming, and on Twitch Middle Age Gaming 2020. And of course, you can listen to our other podcasts as well. So anywhere that we can beat my dad's record would be appreciated. So let's get out there and get those numbers up.
Yeah, I just want to popularize the game,
There you go. All right. And with that's the end of the show. So thanks everybody for coming, and we will see you again later. Goodbye.